Blog Talk Radio.
Nutsville and baseball fans everywhere. My name is Michael LeColin, also known as the Brooklyn Trolley Blogger, and I welcome you back to another episode of the Metsian Podcast. Thank you to our friend Mr. Spiegel for that little ditty that opens our show. A belated happy Father's Day to all the pops out there. And as we observe the solemn Juneteenth holiday, we also bid farewell to the spring months and welcome in summertime. This is a time of transition, folks. Good things are happening. Let me get half of the crew introduced. Hailing from our Constitution state, our tri-state brother-in-arms, Rich Spirago. What's up, my friend?
Hey, Mike. How you doing? A lot going on, right? We have the Juneteenth celebration officially today. As you said, last day of spring. I think summer starts at 5:14 a.m., which is, 8 hours from now. And the Mets had a rare wraparound Monday afternoon game, so a lot to talk about. I'm doing well. Hope you're doing the same.
Yeah. The calendar was quite busy. We will be joined shortly by Sam Maxwell from All Parts Metropolitan. So as soon as he calls in, we'll get him in the loop. In the meantime, I said the spring months, and here comes summertime. Rich, how time flies when you're having fun. How's that for an opener? 42% of the season is done. There's less than 100 games that remain on the schedule. How do you like that? April done, May done, June almost done. 4th of July is only 2 weeks away. And here we are, Rich, good news. The Mets are 45-24. In June, we speculated what kind of month they were going to have in our last podcast. And so far, they're 11-7, which is a lot better than they've done in previous Junes over the last 3-4 years. I just heard it on today's broadcast that 11 of those 45 wins have come by the shutout, obviously combined shutouts. We faced the Marlins finally, and we are now 22-8 versus the division. And to this point, we've only lost 3 series all season. How does that make you feel, Rich?
Oh, I mean, it makes me feel really good, Mike. The thing about this Mets team that I think about, and when I talk to friends, this is what I'm talking about. Best record in the National League. I wish the lead were a little bigger, but okay, I'm sure we'll get into that as we go. 5.5 is certainly not bad. I'd have signed for that in April if you told me it would be that way. But the thing I tell people, I'm not sure if you feel the same way. I get the strong feeling that this team is simply not firing on all cylinders yet. For some reasons are obvious, but they could be better. Best record nationally, but when they start firing on all cylinders, you think about some things. The obvious, no DeGrom, no Scherzer. Hopefully we'll have Scherzer this weekend. No DeGrom, no Scherzer. McGill has been in and out. He missed a month. Now he's going to miss at least another 6 to 8 weeks. And then you think about some of the less obvious things. They're getting nothing out of Eduardo Escobar other than his hit today, of course. He's been not having a good season, let's just say that. They get very little out of the DH spot offensively. Dom wasn't producing. J.D. Davis is not really producing. So you stop and you think to yourself, if they could have the best record in the National League, it's not like one guy is having an off year. They're getting nothing from DH. Their third baseman has given them nothing. Their top two starters have missed more time than they've been available for. To answer your question, I feel really good because I think the best is yet to come.
Well said, and reasonable. Rewind a little bit. They were on that road trip, and the last time we spoke, they were about to play the Angels, and they won 2 out of 3. And they came home, played Milwaukee, won 2 out of 3, and then just wrapped up the series with the Marlins, and won 3 out of 4. You know, so they played 500 on the road and came home and won 5 out of 7. They've gone 7-3 since we last spoke. Isn't that what you want, 500 on the road and rack up the wins at home? You know, it's the way they've been trending, and that's been keeping me positive. There's certain things that keep me positive, like they're plus 66. Well, coming into this game, I haven't checked the updated version, but coming into this game today, they had a plus 66 run differential, which was third best in Major League Baseball. And during these 69 games, the first 69 games of the season, they've done things that, you know, mimic or even supersede what the 86 team did. I laugh saying that. I've also laughed hearing that, but it remains true. So they're doing good things. And, you know, let's stick with the pitching and use that as an example. And I'm going to set it up this way. I think the Mets are far better equipped to go into summer and take on the dog days. Trevor Williams is pitching tomorrow. Look, Tawan Walker pitched the gem. You and I were there Saturday. We didn't know about it, but you were at the game. I was at the game. Tawan Walker on Saturday pitched the gem. That was his second straight. David Peterson, two straight wins against the Angels and the Marlins. Chris Bassitt pitched the gem up until, what, that seventh inning on Sunday when it all came crashing down? Nevertheless, it was a good outing, and he pitched the gem versus Milwaukee. And then Cookie Carrasco, you know, took a loss against the Angels, and he beat Miami. They're keeping us in there. And I say we're far better equipped today than we've been over the last 2-3 years. If you consider Marcus Stroman, Noah Syndergaard, and if you go back to Rick Porcello, Michael Wachez, even Steven Matz, who is underperforming, Jason Vargas, Zach Wheeler. Out of that whole list of names I just gave, Zach Wheeler is the only one earning his income. So I am far more confident with the guys that I mentioned previously, Carrasco, Bassitt, Peterson, Walker, even Trevor Williams. McGill's hurt, yes. And hopefully, you know, we're going to get Scherzer and DeGrom back. But I'm far more confident with these guys than I've ever been with the previously mentioned people over the last 2-3 years. So they give me a lot of confidence. How does this rotation, you know, sit in your eyes, Rich?
I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike. I think, you know, Buck said it today in the post game, exactly what you're talking about. He said in the course of, I'm paraphrasing, but he said in the course of a baseball season, you'll probably need 9 starters at some point. He said 7 to 9, I believe were his exact words. And that's true, you know, because guys will miss time, guys get hurt, it happens, right? The Mets had that freakish thing in 2019 where I believe 152 of their games were started by their 5 intended starters. That's freakish. That's like a statistical anomaly. In general, that doesn't happen. So you need depth. Last year, not to throw the guy under the bus, but last year, you had situations where, you know, they were bringing in guys. It was clear that they were scraping for people. They had to make that deal to get Rich Hill. Ironically, they traded Tommy Hunter for him. Now they have Tommy Hunter back. Maybe we could touch on that because here's a guy who's pitched in a handful of games for the Mets and is a fan favorite, you know. But, you know, you had guys like Jared Eichhoff. You had guys like Jared Eichhoff coming in, you know, who it was clear. I felt bad for him. It was clear he was not a major league pitcher anymore. So this year, as opposed to that, you have your depth is Trevor Williams, who is a solid piece. He's been basically a swing man his whole career, but he's done it on the major league level for years. So, you know, Trevor Williams is not a bad guy to have to turn to. David Peterson is a talented lefty who, you know, has his ups and downs, but you're turning to him as your depth along with Trevor Williams, as opposed to Jared Eichhoff, as opposed to having to make a deal, you know, for at the time, 41-year-old Rich Hill. So I think you're right. I think they're better set up. You know, they have, when they finally get these guys all on the mound together, you know, your DeGrom, Scherzer, McGill, top Cookie at top of the rotation with Taijuan Walker, those five can go up against anybody. You know, now you're looking at David Peterson in that scenario being maybe a lefty out of the bullpen, spot starter. That's pretty good. That's pretty darn good if that guy is, you know, your sixth man up kind of a thing. So this does instill confidence. And again, like I said earlier, yes, it instills confidence to your point, but for the reasons that we're talking about, we haven't seen the best of what the New York Mets have to offer, and something less than their best has given them the best record in the National League.
I'm sorry. From all parts metropolitan, Sam Maxwell joins us. And Sam, you know, we're on the outer layer of this onion, and we're transitioning from spring to summertime. So we're enjoying the last day of spring. And, you know, we're putting the last two and three quarter months under review. And all we've talked about so far was the feel-good, you know, attitude around Flushing Bay with this 45-win record and the pitching that sustained us. So if you want to jump in anywhere with that, go right ahead, my friend. And hello, and how are you?
Hello. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us. thanks to all out there for listening as well. And here I am, like you said, Metropolitan. I was including Jersey and the six boroughs on this Metropolitan journey, coming off the PATH train. You might have heard a little bit of that. I'm going to be biking home to Brooklyn during this, so all's well that ends well. Very excited about this last spring day. So this pitching has been sustaining us, but these at-bats that they grind out without the home run, and, you know, they're ahead in so many offensive categories except for the home run, but they, you know, they're producing more runs than some of the people that are hitting home runs. So while, yes, the pitching has been sustaining us, it's just the timely hitting, especially, that looks very sustainable, unlike in the past when we did have some of these pitching runs, but the offense could not support it. So I think that's a big part. It is just basically what we've been hoping for out of this team for so many years is all of a sudden bursting onto the scene in just a year after we saw a very kind of transitional phase of this franchise. So it's been so exciting to watch. I wait for Howie, Wayne, Gary, Keith, and Ron to queue up every single day, every single night, and let's keep it churning out. Let's keep it chugging.
Way to stick to pitching and fast-forwarding the show about 20 minutes. Let's stick with the offense now. I want to talk about Francisco Lindor, and I want to talk specifically about his first year in a New York uniform and his second year. It reminds me much of the way Carlos Beltran started his Mets career. First season was bad. Let's call it for what it was. Lindor season, not up to snuff. Both players, their second season, we know what Beltran did. Lindor, we know what he's presently doing. And if you want to pick that up, Sam, go right ahead. Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, and I want to see where his average has gotten to, because he went into a major slump right after that finger injury, but has completely ignited since his mother was in the building on Friday night. And even with his – anytime his average is dipping, he still is able to be producing in the times that he does end up getting a hit. I mean, he got a home run out of the finger jam and then kind of just cooled off significantly until this past Friday night. Looking at where he currently stands, and I'm assuming the Baseball References today updated, the batting average is still just needs to get a little higher, but with 11 home runs and 52 RBIs, he's also scored 43 runs so far. I mean, last year he scored 73, and generally speaking, peak all-star Francisco Lindor, we need him to be scoring 100 or so runs, and right now he is certainly on pace. I mean, last year, here's the weird thing about 2021 is that it looks, with that 230 average, it looks very insignificant, but he still was able in on and off year to produce 20 home runs, 63 RBIs, and score 73 runs. So, you know, I want to see that average creep up a little bit, but right now he's on pace for 25 to 30 home runs with 100 RBIs. I just want that average a little high.
I'm less concerned with average. Rich, something I like to do, I like to subtract home runs from RBIs and runs scored. And if you take away Lindor's 11 home runs, he still has over 40 runs batted in. And to me, you know, you're talking about premium production.
I think you're close to that with him. I would agree with Sam on this one. As I look at his career numbers, right, from starting from 2015, his batting average, 313, 301, 273, 277, 284, 258. Then he joined the Mets, 230, and at this point, 243 going into today. So it's not a huge deal, and I feel like I'm nitpicking the guy, but his average has gone down since he became a Met. Now, but flipping that around, now that having been said, that's just sort of like the cold water in the face to reality. You probably saw the other day, they showed the statistic that he's the first middle infielder since Alex Rodriguez in 2000 to get to 50 RBIs in the number of games that the Mets have played. At that point, I think it was 67 or whatever it was. So first middle infielder in all of MLB since 2000 to get to 50 RBIs in 67 games played. So you have to tip your cap for that. He's driving in the runs, absolutely. With his 11 home runs, he's on pace for about 25. You know, his RBIs, he's on pace to blow through 100, probably about 120. So, you know, his OPS, 744. So solid, very solid. He plays the defense, of course. And we've seen, actually, he's playing great defense lately. And so, you know, you see all these things, and you're like, okay, you know, this is the guy the Mets thought they were getting. This is absolutely the guy. Get the average up a little bit, maybe not, whatever. You're not going to nitpick the guy. So you're right. I mean, Francisco Lindor, he's and then there's the off-the-field stuff. You know, he's a positive force. I do think that the guys who are happy like him and, you know, and positive, their intangibles do add value. So I would say in summary, Mike, I'm obviously very happy with the year he's having. It's much better than last year, clearly. Is he performing superstar status? Maybe a cut below that, but he's still a very, very good player and much, much, much closer to the guy the Mets thought they were getting.
And if I can jump in, Mike, before you you do, just in terms of the average, if we're comparing and contrasting to Carlos Beltran, Carlos Beltran still had a 271 batting average in that first year where we said he wasn't up to snuff. So, you know, obviously two different types of players, but that's still where I would like to see that average start to creep up. And I think a lot of it does have to do, I'd have to look at his BABIP, batting average on balls in play, because it does seem like he makes contact. It, you know, he does strike out a little bit, and I have to look at those specific numbers. But I think that it might be some luck involved in how low his batting average is.
Pete Alonso, this is just something I like to have fun with. I say bulky. His numbers are starting to get bulky. I'm not looking for anybody to nitpick this. I'm just having fun with the numbers. 19 home runs, 64 RBIs. That's our guy, the polar bear. The Mets have never had a player win the MVP. What do you guys think?
I'll jump in on that. I think he has a shot, Mike. I do. I think his numbers are getting bulky. I like the way you said that. You know, his numbers are impressive. And so if you, again, I'm doing the math roughly in my head, 19 home runs at this point of the season probably equates to about 42, 43. 63 RBIs equates to probably 135 maybe. So that's a freaking hell of a season. Now, you think about competition. Here's the answer to your question on MVP. You have a guy like Paul Goldschmidt who's having a hell of a year. And the one thing that might work against Pete is he has this reputation for being, you know, an all-out slugger, poor defender. That's exactly what he came up with in 2019. He's a slugger, and he plays bad defense, kind of like Mike, you know, throwback to an American League first baseman when we were kids, right? But the fact is he's hitting 280. I mean, look at his at-bat today. He got it off the middle of the bat, and he got the sacrifice fly. And the Mets needed that run at that point. They did need that run because the Marlins had traffic on the bases all day long. I was personally waiting for them to break through. They never did. So Pete got the job done. Going to right field, and that's why he has 63 RBIs at this point in the season. So to answer your question, his numbers would warrant MVP consideration if they get to where I said they might for sure. Might there be a little bit of a hangover of his reputation? Maybe. Might Goldschmidt have a bit of a positive halo effect going on because he's been doing it for so long? Maybe. So, but would he be a candidate? For sure. Yes, for sure.
And I'll do the same thing to him what I did to Lindor. If you take away his 19 home runs, he still has over 40 wins added in. That's good run production. So the polar bear, Sam.
Oh, man, I almost think from a league-wide status, I mean, maybe not necessarily with the players, but he certainly seems, in terms of the media, to be underrated, even in, within his own town. I mean, he leads the league in home runs, I think, or at least is tied in terms of majors. And, well, not majors, because it's 25 home runs. But, you know, this is – we're talking that – somebody who leads the league in run-producing numbers. And he still is not, you know, I heard Brandon Tierney talking about how he, Pete, now mind you, maybe because of his age, that he couldn't demand $300 million. Now, if we talk about AAV instead, average annual value, you're talking about somebody who's going to get paid. And I think people need to stop underestimating him. Because he's not even remotely, yes, he's not a plus-plus defender, but he's not the liability people sometimes seem to make him out to be in first base. So when you're looking at the fact that Judge is about to make most likely over $300 million for a contract, and then you look at what Pete has done in healthier terms, but similar in terms of the full season. You know, one came up in 17, one came up in 19. But Pete was able to get a 2020 kind of off season under his belt, but then not necessarily produce exactly what he did in his first season, but obviously show that he's not an aberration, that one season was not an aberration. And now he's showing his superstar status. So he's almost underestimated. And he carries this off. He is the essential key piece in a very deep offense. So, can't underestimate Pete, and I love that he's ours.
Nice. All right, let me just throw out a couple of long darts here. Jeff McNeil, he came up lame, hamstring. Luis Guillorme's got to fill in for him. Who's not happy with that? Eduardo Escobar, Rich, as we said, he broke out of a long slump today with the two-run single. Dom Smith was back in the dugout today. And J.D. Davis was the 50th player to get hit by a pitch this season, the 50th Mets player to be hit with a pitch. So anything you want to pick from there, Rich?
Yeah, with McNeil, I worry because, you know, we know hamstrings, those injuries are rough. It could be a cramp, let's hope, but he's had these issues before. With his legs, you know, we remember that he was given some days off because of, quote, tired legs. He's had hamstring issues in the past, and here's another. So I do worry about that. I worry that this could be a chronic, you know, in and out of the lineup kind of a thing and maybe on and off the IL. They don't need that. Yes, Guillorme could fill in for him, and Guillorme has become a very solid role player slash starter on this team. But that McNeil's more than a second baseman. They use McNeil all over the field. And so you have to wonder, you know, if not having him for a period of time, it's not just like you plug in Jormer. You're missing somebody who plays all around the field. So I am a bit worried about McNeil. Eduardo Escobar, I have to say I'm a little disappointed in what we're getting. I think the entire fan base is a little disappointed in what you're getting out of Eduardo Escobar. You know, when you look at his career numbers, they certainly are much better than what the Mets are getting out of him. He's a career average 255 hitter for his career, over 162 game average season. 255, he's hitting about 229 with the Mets. So, he averages 19 home runs a season. He's only got a few with the Mets. Let's see, he's got this season, he has five. So, you know, he's definitely, I don't know what the deal is with this guy, but hopefully he'll get it figured. Hopefully the medical issue is behind him. Obviously, it's very important. So that's Escobar. And about getting hit by pitches, Gary said it today, and I agree with Gary. How many of them could you really point to and say, in this situation, they were throwing at the Mets there? I can't think of one. I really can't. When you think about guys who get thrown at, you know, it's the guy who maybe shows up the other team. It's the pitcher gave up three consecutive home runs, and he's like, okay, the next guy is going to get it. None of that has happened. Like, it hasn't been a situation where we're sitting here watching the games and we're saying, uh-oh, somebody's going to go down here. This isn't good. It's been random. And I really believe it's just a fluke statistical thing that the Mets are getting hit so much. I don't like it. I think it's, you know, goodness knows it's going to be with Jay Davis. Like Buck said, the initial x-ray showed nothing, but they have to do multiple x-rays. It sucks. It's dangerous. It's scary. I really don't think the Mets are being thrown at. I think it's just the way the cookie is crumbling that they're getting hit more than other teams because pitchers, you know, obviously are having difficulty, you know, the whole ball thing and the sticky stuff and the Noah said it was like throwing a cue ball and all that kind of stuff. So it's a concern. I don't think it's intentional. I just think it's the numbers are lining up against the Mets in this one for whatever the reason.
What say you, Sam?
Mike, I'm going to start with the hit-by-pitch part because you and I were talking about what Lee Mazzilli had to say. And he was very much on the old-school hitter approach, which is the pitcher already has the full advantage generally, has the advantage generally. They can hit you anytime they want. Just remember that. And if with already the advantage, why would you want to give them a better advantage anyway? Like, it just would be unfair. That was Lee Mazzilli's take. And, you know, you had something to say about what this was like 100 years ago, and I'll let you do that with that. But it's one thing you're never, ever going to be able to correct. There's always going to be the risk in a game like this that ball is going to hit a human being. That's just the way it is. I do think it's somewhat fluky, but I do think the scouting report has been Mets will be improved. Don't let them beat you. Come inside as often as you can. And that might have gone a little haywire. Eduardo Escobar, I think he's been doing better lately. Obviously that was really an issue the other day that's just a little unclear, but you know, glad he's okay. I have a feeling that he'll have kind of a so-so season, but still be very important. He seems to bring a lot of people together within the club. He does have that pop that could ignite at any second. And he just could be one of those players that just doesn't have a really good season, but we're going to be talking about him a lot in the lore of him. That's weirdly how I feel. Maybe that's just too spiritual on my end, but that's what I think about Eduardo Escobar. I think he's going to come around and maybe exactly at the right time for us. And McNeil, I would say this, I'm worried for sure because of that, a lot of what Rich pointed out, but I'm more worried about McNeil and his career than the idea that the Mets can't weather the storm. Because as difficult as things get, they always seem lately to piece it together. So I just hope that he will be okay one way or another, because I love watching Jeff McNeil perform as a ball player.
I will explain what you just mentioned about the baseball, Sam, and then we'll go into halftime. 100 years ago, 1921, baseball was facing this very same dilemma with the baseballs in grip. This was on the heels of Carl Mays, the pitch that hit Chapman. What was his first name, Sam? Do you remember?
Ray Chapman. It just came to me.
Ray Chapman. Okay. Carl Mays of the Yankees hit Ray Chapman in the head with their pitch. They did not wear batting helmets in those days, and the pitch wound up in Ray Chapman's unfortunate passing away. So after that, both leagues, the American League and National League, ruled that new balls would be put in play should the ball in play become scuffed, dirty, compromised, etc. And that effectively put an end to the dead ball era. And then along came Babe Ruth. Sure, he hit 29 home runs in 1920, but in 1921, he hit 59. And that's when the whole home run explosion happened, 1921, because of new baseballs. There was a fresh baseball in there all the time. You know, baseballs prior to that, you were allowed to beat them, spit on them, crush them, kick them, scuff them, rip them, do anything you could. And the whole infield was taking part in that, to include the catcher and giving that baseball back to the pitcher. That all changed with the 1921. New baseball all the time. And, you know, obviously we saw the rise, a dramatic rise in home runs. However, pitchers complained that they failed to get a decent grip on the ball because it was too slick. And there was a lot of meetings between the league leaders. And ultimately, the American League acted before the National League. The American League prescribed a white powder, put that in quotes, to be administered to the baseballs by the home plate umpire only, so that pitchers can get a better grip on the ball. Bob Sharkey, Fred Tony, a pitcher for the Yankees, a pitcher for the New York Giants, you know, they complained about the grip. Spitballers were grandfathered into the rule. They were allowed to throw spitballs. But, you know, the league had to resort to administering a white powder to the baseball so pitchers would have a better grip, because a lot of them were complaining it was too slippery. So here we are 100 years later, and we're having the same dilemma. So with that being said, let's go into halftime. Let's do a couple of shameless plugs. Rich, I will start with you first. Where can we find you on social media? What are you doing, and where can we find it?
Well, thanks, Mike. Social media, CT Mets Fan, or Met Fan Rich. It's the same account, but I go by CT Mets Fan. And my stuff is Mesmerized Online, MMO. I have shifted my focus from Mets history to more business of baseball articles, you know, things like attendance figures, you know, TV ratings, and obviously focusing on the Mets. Like, I did a bunch of stuff on the improvements coming up to Citi Field next year with the deal with Samsung and increasing the fan experience. Wrote something about how Steve Cohen is having some of his top analytical people at his hedge fund business work for the Mets. He's paying them out of his own pocket, not out of the hedge fund account, but these folks are actually, you know, kind of working a job and a half, so to speak, and applying their analytical smarts that they use in the financial industry to Mets baseball. So stuff like that is what I've been writing. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. And Sam, shameless plug on your behalf.
Well, I think the shameless plug can only start with the sound of music. I'm going to call it the sound of music, and I think you guys would too. This is the edge of the Brooklyn Bridge on the Manhattan side in front of the Verizon building, the municipal building, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And this is one of the things that are that is my passion, is biking around the city, looking at the city. And honestly, I should do more social media-wise and media, just content-wise, regarding how much I love this town, and Brooklyn especially. Bedford and Sullivan, the story of Brooklyn and their Dodgers, and how both were affected by the rapid transition into modern America. That is my most ambitious screenwriting project, where I want to make an HBO-style TV series. And I was even thinking today, hey, you know, MLB Network has never done original programming. How about I be the first? But that's a whole other conversation for another day. I'm a converted Mets fan from Yankees. That's right, 2005. Let's go Mets.
Shameless plug, Brooklyn Trolley Blogger. What am I doing? I'm replaying the 1890 Brooklyn Bridegrooms regular season. Having fun, learning things. I cover a lot of the Brooklyn Cyclones, and not that the New York Rangers are out of the playoff picture. Probably go back and start redigging up Brooklyn Royal Giants games and putting that on the blog as well. So now that shameless plugs are out of the way, gentlemen, let's get back to baseball. I want to keep it on the field for one more matter. I want to talk about Edwin Diaz. You know, over the last couple of years, he's gotten some heat from fans, even this podcast, sometimes deservedly so, but he seems to have matured. He's performing well, and he's got this entrance music, the trumpets, kind of sends chills up your spine. I want you guys to chime in about that. Tell me how you feel about those trumpets and about his performance, and give us a feel for how much his performance has elevated the Mets season. And Sam, I will start with you.
Oh, man. I mean, I think the maturity started with that no-hitter. You saw him own the moment, and you kind of, I think a lot of us Mets fans had, reservations about him as he was coming out of that bullpen. Of like, oh, you know, it's just a regular Mets fan that's just going to be, woe is me, this is where it all goes wrong. And if you look at, you know, I have yet to rewatch that ninth inning. I know there's YouTube clips of it now. But he really, like retrospectively in my head watching that game, he had it from the bullpen session. On his way in with those trumpets, he knew what he needed to do, and he did it. And that's why I've gained a lot more confidence. And if you've seen lately, especially, and maybe this is where you can really see the tide turning, some of this luck, that play at the plate the other night, great throw by Pete, by the way. But he still seems to be coming through even when he doesn't have his best stuff, and that's the sign of maturity as well. I will say, trouble signs indeed you should still try to pick up on. I don't know if this is me being pessimistic or just critiquing that I think, and they are probably discussing this as well, that sometimes when he's trying to go with the slider on the outside part of the plate, it can flatten out. And I think a lot of people's hits, if you notice, a lot of where he's going wrong but still able to come out on top just because of luck or what have you, is because they're all just bloopers, you know, that they're able to get off the end of the bat with that slider that doesn't cut enough. And that is just one thing to watch out on, because unlike other times, like when he, in the past, when he had been going badly, he is getting shellacked. You know when he doesn't have it. Right now, he's kind of getting blooped on. And that's where that slider just needs to kind of, you know, like he's able to correct it in the moment. He was able to get that strikeout on a great slider to end the game yesterday. But early on, to kind of make it a little bit closer, the slider on the outside part of the plate was a little flat. So that's really just where he needs to correct it. And some of those blue pits that have been coming up can probably get under control.
I think you might be muted, Mike.
You are absolutely right. Dollar in the jaw, cha-ching. The only thing with the trumpet, they're original. When have you heard this before?
Oh, now I'm muted. It is very original, and that was kind of one of the things that, like, kept him going when things were going wrong, was just, like, there was still an aura, even when people weren't completely on his side. So I appreciate you reminding me that your initial question was the trumpets, Mike. And like I said, like, you know, like, we're talking about the soundtrack of the city right now. That is part of the soundtrack of the Mets. It is an aura. It is a feeling. Everybody gets pumped up. Mr. Met and Mrs. Met are playing the trumpet along with it. It's great. It's just, I don't know, you know, he obviously was the one who chose the song, but everything has come together exactly the way you want a feeling and a moment to come together as a franchise and a player, complementing and supplementing each other. So I love it.
Rich, what kind of vibes are you feeling, man?
You know, there's another player who comes up. It's a hitter who comes up to Narco in the National League. I have no idea who it is. I know we all talk about it when it happens, that there's someone else who comes up to that. But anyway, I think it's become iconic. Maybe it's a step short of iconic, but it's getting there. It's about a step removed from Mariano Rivera coming in to Enter Sandman. It's becoming a big thing. It's becoming an iconic thing, you know, where Mr. and Mrs. Met have the fake trumpets and the fans do it. And it's great. I think it's, it's something everybody rallies around. It gets energy in the ballpark. And then moving from that to Diaz himself, you know, when the Mets got him, you said, okay, well, they gave up, you know, Kelenic and all this kind of stuff. But then, they got an elite closer. Well, for a couple of years, he wasn't an elite closer. We know that. You know, in 2019, he had that ridiculous season where he was giving up all the home runs. You know, he had a 5.59 ERA, but yet at the same time, he struck out 99 batters in 58 innings, which is very close to his pace now. He has 53 strikeouts in 27 innings, almost, you know, two strikeouts inning in both cases. So he was striking everybody out, but he was giving up a boatload of home runs and blowing saves. Well, it seems like everything has come together for Edwin Diaz. He's still striking out people at the same clip, but he's not blowing the saves. He's whether it's the trumpets and the fan energy, or whether it's better command of the slider, whether it's James McCann, whatever it is, the Mets, I think I could confidently say, I'm interested to, you know, what you guys think. I think I could confidently say the Mets have an elite closer. He is. He's an elite closer now. He comes in and he dominates. Of course he's going to have games. We all, you know, we see it, right? The game against the Brewers, that wasn't really even his fault. There really wasn't hard contact there, but, you know, he got by in the skin of his – against the Marlins, he did give up a run. It actually hit him better than the Brewers did. So, of course, he's human. You know, Mariano blew games. But overall, in the pantheon of closers, I think the Mets have an elite closer right now. This guy comes in with, you know, 101, 102 mile-an-hour stuff, a wipeout slider, and, of course, he's a human being. Every now and then he's going to hang one or miss his location. But far more often than not, he's hitting his location. He's getting the job done. And I really think the Mets have to think about locking this guy up long term. I think he's in the top two or three closers in the game. Why would you let this guy walk? I think it has become a priority. I really do. I think when you have a guy with this kind of stuff who has figured it all out and harnessed it, I think it has become a priority to think about extending him. And one more question for you guys, in addition to his elite status, with how well the Mets are doing, you know, best record National League, 45 wins, are either of you guys a little like, whoa, he only has 14 saves? I say only because the Mets have 45 wins, and this guy is an elite closer. He is your closer on the best team in the National League, and he only has 14 saves. I don't know. For some reason, I would think he'd be trending at this point to 22 saves. To me, it's a very odd-looking number.
Well, I'll jump in real quick and think about the way that Buck used him in the eighth inning, the way that Buck sometimes uses him. closes games with 4-0, which always scares me, but Edwin's come through in those situations. And I think that a lot of times it might just have to do with the save situation. That might not be coming up as often for Edwin Diaz and the Mets, and that's really, when you think about it, a good thing.
And what I was going to say isn't too far off. Again, I would point to their run differential for 66, third best in Major League Baseball. You know, those save situations, 3 runs or less, or the requirements of 3 innings, you know, a lot of times I haven't been there. The Mets are, you know, out hitting their mistakes, as we say, or hitting above their ERA, you know, so that's a good problem to have, Rich.
Agreed. And I think what it speaks to is what you said. I think the Mets don't find themselves in as many save situations because they've scored the most runs in the National League. There's your answer, right? And I think what it is, I think it is a bit fluky that your closer has 14 saves, you have 45 wins, but then if you look behind it, you know, the next step down in the analytics, what you see is that they have the most runs in the National League, and it starts to make a little more sense, you know, that they're not in save situations as much as some other teams. But so I think it's a good thing. It's just, and I think when you look at it and you see 14, you're like, and then you think about it, okay, first in the National League runs, okay, it becomes a really good thing. And, yeah, I don't know. I think it's great. And I don't know how you guys feel about his elite status or the priority of retaining him.
I'm with you. That's where this is headed, at least insofar as what I see. He's got an upward trajectory, so I agree. Lock him up. He's a lot more comfortable in his own skin. He's accustomed to New York City now and the pressures and the demands and really how to deal with it on a daily basis and, you know, how to deflect from the media and all that stuff. So I think he comes to work with a clear mind now and a boatload of confidence, you know. And we may not have been able to say that 2 years ago. He was still young and, you know, very impressionable, or maybe the moment was too big or the pressure. I mean, he disguised it well if it was too big for him, but he's certainly matured, and I think he's just a lot more comfortable in his own skin. I think you're right, Rich. Sign him up, lock him up, because that's where this is headed. Good problem to have. Sam,
and
take us
on
off
my, on my point. On my point, to put it
go.
Bluntly about signing him, to put it bluntly about signing him, yes.
Yeah. Sam, take us off the field and into the booth. The return of Lee Mazzilli. Me personally, I thought, you know, him and Joe Torre, he strayed for a little while with the Yankees and Joe Torre and that whole relationship in the Bronx. Lee Mazzilli strayed. Now, I'm saying that as a fellow Brooklynite. He went over here to Lincoln High School. But you know, he's back in the fold, or at least I think he is. You fill us in and tell us how he did.
I think it's really interesting to hear him in the booth with Howie. And it becomes a different setting, of course, because Howie's doing the play-by-play for the whole game as opposed to the alternating that usually happens, even with a fill-in. I'm also curious if Rich heard any of it on the radio or, you know, just how many people did. I think that Lee Mazzilli brings more of just Lee Mazzilli than necessarily being an overall good color commentator. I think you could kind of see the rust because they're kind of just bringing him on to be Lee Mazzilli, which I hope they do more because it's not like he's doing it all that often. You know, he was on the SNY post game for a while in the aughts, the late aughts, but I don't think he's done this much except for random fill-ins, maybe like 6-7 times a year, I think. So, I mean, and it's something that, like, you know, you and I, both on Bedford and Sullivan as well as on here, discussed with Howard Kelman about that New York accent and how it kind of gets washed away whenever some of these New York broadcasters go out into Middle America. It's weird that like somebody like Red Barber played so well with the Southern drawl here, yet New Yorkers generally, certain politician recently, don't trend with middle America and that accent. So I think that Susan is an aberration because she definitely has the accent when she's doing even the play-by-play part when she's on play-by-play. Susan Waldman, of course, who we talked about earlier off air, Mike. So that's my opinion about Lima Zilli, and I like the New York I like the New York accent on radio broadcasting because I just think it brings a certain kind of character. But it's the actual formatting and logistics of it that I think that Lee needs to be around the booth more to really integrate.
Like I said, I think he's strayed for a little bit. I'd like to see him get back into the fold. Rich, do you know if he's going to be at Old Timers Day?
I haven't heard one way or the other on that.
I'm sorry. I do think that was mentioned, and I believe he's going to be around on Old Timers Day. I believe that was discussed.
That would be cool. That will be very cool.
You know, from my perspective on Mazzilli, he was my guy in the 70s. I mean, let's face it, Mike, you and I both know. After 73, for the rest of the 70s, there was nothing there. I mean, nothing. And so, Seaver for a couple of years, of course, you know, 75, 76. But for the most part, you know, the Mets didn't have a lot. And Mazzilli being the local guy and the swagger and the tight pants, you know, and he was just kind of, he was what the Mets had to offer. And he was, you know, he gave, for me, he was the guy I liked watching. I like watching him and Lenny Randle, frankly, and Steve Henderson on those late 70s teams. So combination broke my heart and burned my ass to see him with the Yankees. You know, when he played for them and in the early 80s and then he coached for them, it ripped my heart out. And he was with the Yankees for a very long time. And then you're right. He did some Mets studio work and then he kind of, you know, disappeared for a while. And as far as I know, the first time he had ever done Mets radio booth work was last September in the Subway Series when Howie, you know, shut it down because of his health issues and the Mets had kind of like a rotating cast. Mazzilli did the Subway Series. And now he filled in for this weekend when Wayne Randazzo took the weekend off. I heard a little bit of it in the car here and there. What you said, the fact that he has that thick Brooklyn accent, I think, plays very well, unlike Susan Waldman's New England accent. You know, her dog is named Fenway, but yet she claims to bleed Yankee pinstripes.
She certainly has some sort of twang, and I didn't even realize that. But I know that, like, any time that Craig Carton is impersonating her, he always sounds like an old Jewish mother from Brooklyn.
She's from Boston, and she named her dog Fenway. She sang the national anthem in the 1986 World Series in one of the games at Fenway. I don't know if you knew that, but she did. And she's a diehard Red Sox. She was, obviously. And now she, you know, has turned coat on, you know, being a Yankee broadcaster anyway. But I think Mazzilli's accent plays well. Like you said, Sam, I think it's great. I think it's homey. You know, it's the way when you go to the game, it's the way you hear people talk. And Mazzilli's like one of us. That's great, you know. And the fact that as much time as he did in the Bronx and all that stuff, he will always be a Met to me. You know, he came up with the Mets, and he will always be a Met. And I love seeing him associated with the organization in whatever capacity. So, a long way of saying I think it's fantastic that he was in the booth this weekend. Hopefully he does more. I know that with Howie healthy, thank goodness, that they might not have a need for fill-ins too much, but I hope when they do, they dip in and get Mazzilli. I think it's great. I think it's great. But what was he saying? I'm curious more about when he was talking about guys getting hit by pitches. What was his overall point? I didn't quite pick up on that.
He was just basically, he just sounded very much like the old school hitter who isn't buying this entire like plea for a better grip. And the three things that he basically was, like, trying to hammer home was that don't forget that a pitcher can hit you at any time he wants, and that they already generally have an advantage on the control level. Why would you give them a bigger one? Is basically what he was saying. He says he's just like, I'm not, like, he was very adamant, very passionate about not buying the entire idea that these balls need to have, the pitchers need to have the ability to grip these balls better. And Howie brought up the idea that, you know, even batters are in favor of it to make sure that their safety is in order. But Lee was like, eh. So it was a very interesting moment. It was a very interesting moment.
And my only point was there's little grains of truth in everything. There's little grains of truth in Mazzilli's attitude and what he believes, but there's also little grains of truth in a slippery baseball and the problems that happen because, you know, we're doing it again 100 years later.
Right, and that's the, like George Lucas once said, for all my Star Wars fans out there, it's poetry, it rhymes.
There you go. So, gentlemen, that's all the Metsian stuff I got. If you guys have any outstanding issues, matters, rude remarks, going once, going twice.
I will bring up the Seth Lugo paternity list and Dominic Smith being called up. It's going to be very interesting to see the way that plays out, considering I think Dominic Smith is most likely going to be up here with whatever next roster spot has to happen. And it's probably, I think, if Nick Plummer hasn't been sent down yet, I think he's certainly in jeopardy of being done so. You know, it would be nice to see Dominic, like, really prove that he needs to stay. But when Seth Lugo comes back, you know, obviously he's been struggling a bit lately. And so that also is an element of this move. You know, he's obviously, congratulations on his child's birth. But something's been off and like a lot of Mets fans have pointed out, it's not necessarily immediately isolated to this season. This has kind of been building.
Rich?
Mike, I have one to throw in if I could.
Say that again?
Oh, I have a little note to throw in if I could.
Yeah, go for it.
The Mets today signed Ender Inciarte, and, you know, obviously that's not a sexy move and all of that. And a couple days ago, they signed this fellow named Anthony Goes, who is a speed demon outfielder. The thing about Anthony Goes is interesting is that he has been on three World Series winners. He's played, I think, less than 100 games in the major leagues, but he has three rings. And because he's been in the right place at the right time, he's been like that 25th guy, pinch runner, defensive outfielder kind of a guy. So they signed him. They signed Ender Inciarte. So why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because I think the Mets are doing everything just right. They've gotten away from the reliance on the home run. We touched on that. And they're starting to add these little pieces that when you come close to a postseason run or in the postseason and you need a guy like an Ender Inciarte, maybe as your fifth outfielder, a guy who in the ninth inning can go get it. I mean, he could still go get it. And Anthony Goes can still go get it. He's extremely fast, a great defensive outfielder. They're subtly adding pieces so they don't have to bring up the kinds of guys they brought up that we talked a little bit about earlier in the context of pitching that they've had to do the last couple of years. You know, they're adding these quality pieces for depth, and nobody's going to write home about these guys, but they're stockpiling these guys that they could maybe use later in the season or in a postseason context, and I think it's great. That's all I wanted to say.
And can I just bring up about Ender Inciarte? It's just funny to hear that name because I always attribute him to that crazy great play when we could have walked off with Yoenis Cespedes against the Braves, and he robbed a home run to finish the game for the Braves and keep their win. So it would be really that would be really sexy to see Inciarte all of a sudden, you know, on this side of things without the tomahawk across his chest.
Right.
And very quickly,
right.
getting back to Dom Smith, when he was first sent down, what I was thinking was that the Mets were looking to give J.D. Davis time. This way they can shop him and trade him and retain Dom Smith. I don't know if that's still in play. My mind hasn't veered much, but what do you guys think about that? Rich?
I don't know. I think the Mets are going to be aggressive at the deadline, obviously. And Dom is probably one of their most movable commodities. So in my gut, I think they sent him down to fix himself, you know, get some at-bats. Like, you got to get the hit like 2.670 or something like that, which isn't great, but, you know, not bad either. A few home runs too. So I think they sent him down to fix himself, you know, get some positive momentum. And I really believe that the plan is probably to, okay, look, now he's back in the major leagues, get him some at-bats, up his trade value. And I still think the ultimate plan is to trade him at the deadline because he could probably bring back what, you know, something that they might really need. I believe that's the case, that it was all a premeditated plan, you know, to get his confidence back, get him back up here, show value so his value goes up. He doesn't fit on this team long term. We know that. I mean, he's not an outfielder. Thank God they've stopped that experiment, which was dreadful from the beginning and a very ill-conceived idea. So he's not an outfielder. It's not fair to make him a DH. He doesn't want to be a DH. You don't want to make a guy do something he doesn't want to do, especially at that young age. So I do think the ultimate plan is still to trade him.
Sam?
Yeah, I don't think much has changed since the last time that we talked about Dominic Smith. I think that it's nice to have – I mean, J.D. Davis did a pretty good job at first base, and the Mets obviously – were able to piece together and show that they can work it out without the plus defender Dominic Smith as their backup first baseman. But I just think, other than Sheffman, in terms of the names that were discussed for possible trade chips this offseason, I think J.D. Davis and Dominic Smith days are numbered, maybe together, maybe separately, maybe one or the other. But those are the two names to really keep an eye on, because they're very easily movable, valuable offensive chips if Don can get himself together. But, you know, the way J.D. Davis is showing how he can hit on a consistent basis with consistent playing time, it's a very good piece to have when you look at what you need and you consider whether the decreasing of those players would have a negative reaction. And when you really look at it, the way you could improve with these guys as trade chips, it most likely would not have a major negative reaction to the way you're performing. So, you know, I think, for instance, clubhouse-wise, I think there was a big difference between Bartolo in 2016 and not having Bartolo in 2017. I don't necessarily think that's what you're looking down the barrel of the gun of when considering moving these players.
We shall see. Off to Houston and Miami. Let's go Mets. I have one last question, and this is important to me because it will determine my future tomorrow night. Max Scherzer is supposed to make a rehab start. I was under the impression he was going to do it at Brooklyn here in Coney Island with the Cyclones. And then on Twitter, I saw somebody say they were going to Binghamton to go catch his rehab start. So I'm a little confused. Does anybody know where he's going to pitch tomorrow, Binghamton or Coney Island? Rich, Sam?
I do.
I heard Binghamton.
Yeah, it's Binghamton,
okay.
Mike.
Are you driving up there, Mike? Is that a question for us?
No. You know, last week I had put it in my mind when they first mentioned it that he was going to have a rehab start on Tuesday. I was sure it was going to be here. And initially, I think they did mention that it was going to be here. But like I said, I saw it on Twitter. And now I'm disappointed, and I won't be going to the Cyclone game tomorrow. Although I'll be going Saturday.
Go to Binghamton. I know how spontaneous you know, like to be. I'm putting it out in the ether now.
You know what? I might. Don't rule it out. Anyway, I have nothing else. Boy, we could do a whole show on the minor league because those guys are just tearing the cowhide off of baseballs over at Binghamton. Wow. Maurizio and I didn't even want to get into it because I'll go in a whole another hour tangent on the podcast. So let us get into our final word. You've been listening to the Metsian podcast with my partners, Sam Maxwell and Rich Farrago. I am Michael Colon. It's been our pleasure talking Metsian baseball with you this evening once again. And that's that. Let's go Mets. We're in first place. It's a good place to be. And, you know, hopefully, as Sam says, we'll keep pushing on. So, Sam, I will go to you for your final word.
For sure. Keep on pushing. That's a good final word. Thank you for reminding me of my saying, specifically back in 2015, of course. And this is a really exciting team. We got Max Scherzer coming back soon. Hopefully soon we'll be talking about Jacob DeGrom on this podcast. And the fact that they're you're starting to see a winning culture being instilled all around. And that is the only reason they've been able to sustain what they have without some of these names that are the best in the business. You know, it's a far cry from the Wilpon era when Jeff wanted to push Pedro in a meaningless season out onto the mound. And that ruined our potential world championship in 2006. So I do tend, maybe it's just like, you know, my inner Metsian nature to constantly be bringing the Wilpons up, but I still don't think we've had a complete memorandum, a denouement when it comes to unfolding the epic tragedy / comedy that was the Wilpon era. So maybe that's why it's just ripe with narrative one way or another. But anyway, we are no longer there. I keep bringing it up one way or another because I can have a bigger smile on my face knowing that we're going farther away from that. So let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Thank you, Sam. Rich, your final word.
I think unanimity is a good thing. I'm going to go with keep on pushing. There's really nothing else to say. I mean, they're at the point of the season now where, you know, you're as you started, Mike, we are day one of summer tomorrow, hot dog days, all those cliches, but it's true. You know, they're about to play game 70. Still a long way to go. You've got to keep grinding through the summer months. Don't let any of these good feelings get away. Don't let any of the good feelings get away. Just keep doing what you're doing, and let's hope that they continue to do these things. But also with the addition of getting some of these pieces back, like Scherzer, hopefully DeGrom, and just keep on pushing.
Thank you, Rich. Let's go Mets. Fun. Let the summer begin. Enjoy it, everyone. And that's all I got. Enjoy the summer. Thank you, Mets fans. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Rich. Thank you all for tuning into the Metsian podcast. Hopefully, by the time we speak again next week, the Mets will have won at least two or three more series and have maintained their first place standing. Until then, this is Michael LeColin, and on behalf of Sam Maxwell and Rich Farrago, good night, all, and let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets. Good night, everybody.